So what exactly is your plan to reduce congestion in Sydney peak hour?
I don't think there's a single smart pill to fix the congestion problem in Sydney during peak hour. And I think when you read the recent Creating Great Australian Cities report, they said that Australian cities are behind compared to our counterparts. We have, you know, higher average congestion, lower average transport coverage, growing commute distances. I think to reduce congestion requires a broader policy option, not just imposing a congestion tax. Taxation can be used to change behavior, but a lot is required. Like, the government needs to think about housing policies, energy policies, climate change, environmental infrastructure investment. And we can use a carrot and a stick approach. And the carrot approach is to kind of educate the public that personal transportation is actually very inefficient. We use passenger motor vehicles weighing 2,000 kilograms to carry 100 to 400 kilograms of passenger weight.
Wow.
Whereas if you look at public transport, it's a much more efficient way of carrying passengers from one place to another. So if we are going to use the stick approach to introduce congestion tax, I think it should be used to change behavior mode. And when I did my PhD about 10 years ago, I suggested that we should introduce concepts like charging. If you're going to charge congestion tax, base it on the weight of the vehicle, the engine size, the engine power, and the emissions. And this was picked up by a study by Deloitte and Infrastructure Partnership Australia, and they suggested that if you're going to introduce congestion charging, then you should base the charges on factors like the mass of the vehicle, the energy consumed, the location and time of the road use, and peak period or not peak period. So more is required than just, we need to actually even reduce the number of vehicles on the road. If you look at the increase in the vehicle population from 1955 to 2013, there was 371% increase in passenger motor vehicles in Australia.
Wow.
That's amazing. So we need to do more than just immediate pill to just try and reduce congestion and learn from other cities like Singapore and other countries where they have used other systems and road pricing systems to change. In fact, even if you think about public transport, there's so much we can do to attract our passengers and our population to start using public transport, and our policy is required to do that, that we make public transport more attractive.
And speaking about other countries, have we seen a tax strategy similar to this applied overseas, and has it been successful?
Yes. I mean, what comes to my mind is Singapore, London, and Stockholm. They have been very successful in Singapore. Singapore started their road pricing system way back in 1975. They used the first cordon pricing system way back in 1975. And this was replaced by the electronic road pricing in 1998. So they have a vehicle unit on the dashboard and a smart card with fares stored. And it's a fully automatic system on specific routes, times of the day and directions, and variable pricing designed to respond to congestion in real time. And it varies depending on the type of the vehicle. And since they introduced it, they have really reduced their traffic in the inner city by 24%. Average speeds have increased, so the traffic can move faster in those city areas from 30 to 35 kilometers to 40 to 45 kilometers. But what Singapore is, why they've been so successful is that in addition to just the congestion pricing in certain routes, they have they control their vehicle population by what they call a certificate of entitlement. So to purchase the vehicles, people have to pay up to as much as $50,000 to just own a vehicle, and government controls the car ownership with this COE, Certificate of Entitlement. So they release very limited certificates of entitlement for car ownership. So controlling the car ownership has to go hand in hand together with public transport. And even in London, before before they introduced the golden pricing scheme, which is very successful, they had to put in 300 new buses, update bus routes, 8,500 park and ride spaces, introduce the bike and pedestrian infrastructure. So you have to work on it before congestion pricing can be introduced. A lot of planning is required. And what London legislation has done is that in London, if whatever funds they raise through infrastructure, through the congestion charging, is plowed back into transportation improvements, and they have to plow it back into it. So then they use that fund to change behavior and by making the public transport more attractive. Similarly, in Stockholm in Sweden, same thing. It's been quite successful. It also reduces the emissions. The quality of the air improves. It's just a win-win if it's combined with a global kind of a more universal policy, not just to reduce congestion. Then it can be very successful. So Singapore, London, Stockholm, they've been very, very successful. The traffic has really reduced, and people have increased using public transport. I think can be very, very successful.
Speaking of the tax and how successful it's been overseas, what kind of price, essentially, would you expect it to be? I know you were mentioning before that it would be ideal to kind of cater the price depending on what type of vehicle you have. How expensive would it be? Like, are we talking about the M2 at peak hour where it can get up to $15 or $20 for a truck?
I think the pricing, obviously, a good economic model would need to be worked out based on the pricing. But I think the pricing has to be combined. See, you get a big hue and cry from people if you impose it at a very high price. So introducing it slowly would be a better thing than to bring a very high price to start with. And even in London, they started off a lot less, and then they increased it later on if it wasn't, when people weren't changing their habits. But I think if you're using taxation as a tool, it should be to follow that tool. It should be more than just congestion pricing. So in addition to congestion pricing, and whatever price you fix, has to kind of, on the other side of the coin, the government's got to try and give some subsidies to encourage people to use public transport. So other tax laws need to be changed as well, like fringe benefit tax, for example, needs to change to make salary sacrifice and using employer cars lot less attractive. Otherwise, people would still be wanting to use the car, and we are so addicted to our cars that people will still use the cars even if you put a high price otherwise, and they pass on the cost to somebody else. If you're using a car for a business, you will use the cars and pass the cost to somebody else. So the pricing, whatever we fix, might not solve the congestion problem unless there is other alternative policies together with it to help change the people's habits, really. In fact, the price of public transportation coming down can actually increase the demand for public transport. So the money that, whatever you raise, help the price of public transport come down at the same time, then we're going to change the habit. The fringe benefit tax has an advantage not only for cars, but there's no advantage for employers giving employees free public transport. If employers provided public transport to the employees, that would be subject to full fringe benefit tax. Same thing, but there's no, if an employer provides bicycles or cycling, right to work type of incentives to the employees, again, there's no fringe benefit tax advantage. So there should be other tax advantages compared to change the habit, and then you can set a price. I think setting even a kind of a small price, and I can't give you a price what would be, but I think you should start off small, very low price, and then from there change it to a higher price and change other taxation policies to encourage shift from using cars to public transport. I mean, other countries have used cycle to ride, and they've been very successful in UK, Belgium, Netherlands, very, very successful where tax incentives are used to give either direct or indirect benefits to employees to use this alternative means of transportation.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Lots of things to look around, I suppose, to try to reduce our peak hour times. Hey, thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning, Vafula.
You're very welcome. Thank you.